well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a great weekend. Mine was, too short, as always, but not too bad at all. Got to go on a little road trip with my wife yesterday. That was nice. Enjoyed the last real spring-like day I think we're going to get in Virginia, even though it is not yet May. It's, it's getting towards summertime here. California has beautiful weather, but it is also, according to one paper, the wild, wild west, at least the Bay Area in California, the wild, wild west. This from the San Jose Mercury News, talking about shootings on Alameda County highways. In fact, an increase in shootings in Alameda County overall, despite the fact that shootings appear to be down in much of the state and much of the country, to be honest. So what is going on in the Bay Area of California? I mean, again, it's not like the Bay Area is exempt from all of California's gun control laws. So why is Alameda County the wild, wild west and not, say, I don't know, Arizona or Utah or any of the constitutional carry, locales out west? Interesting and worth discussing, which we're going to do right now. The San Jose Mercury News reports that while encouraging signs abound elsewhere in the state, the scourge of freeway shootings remains persistent in the East Bay, where the problem in Alameda County appears to be just as bad, if not worse, than pandemic-era highs seen across the state a few years ago. The county had the same number of reported shootings, 217, as the rest of the entire Golden Gate Division, covering the nine larger Bay Area counties from 2021 to 2023, largely because of shootings in Alameda County increased slightly over that period of time, while the rest of the region saw reports of gunfire drop by more than half. Now, again, I'm not going to credit California's gun laws for the drop in violent crime, because those gun laws, for the most part, have been in place for decades, right? They've continued tweaking those laws, but those laws are also aimed at legal gun owners. I mean, things like the 10-day waiting period, the one gun a month, the multiple versions of the ban on so-called assault weapons, bans on large capacity magazines. Again, those have been around in various forms for well over 10 years. So you can't point to them and say, aha, well, that's why crime went down in the Bay Area or most of the Bay Area over the past couple of years. Now, crime, generally speaking, is a local phenomenon. Now, you go back to 2020 when we saw the nationwide decline in crime that had really persisted from the early 1990s until 2020. And then all of a sudden we saw that nationwide spike. You can point to the pandemic. You can point to the civil unrest. You can point to the defund the police movement. You can point to the closures of courts, the release of inmates from jails, the pullback by police, even in localities that did not defund law enforcement agencies. All of those things that, again, occurred nationwide did have a corresponding impact on violent crime in the vast majority of jurisdictions. But as we've gotten further away from the pandemic, courts are now reopening. A lot of the agencies that were defunded, we're now seeing politicians say, oh, okay, we got to get tough on crime. We got to get back to the basics, get back to what works, right? Even in places like Washington, D.C., they're starting to do that. But again, from a general phenomenon, crime is local. In any given community, we're talking about a very small group of core offenders who are driving, if not the majority of violent crime, certainly a plurality of violent crime. And that suggests that what's happening in Oakland and in Alameda County is worth investigating, right? Because most cities across the country right now are seeing a decrease in shootings and in homicides, which is a very good thing. This is happening not just in, gun-controlled Los Angeles. This is happening in constitutional carry Oklahoma City. This is happening in places like Houston, Texas, right, where there is a strong culture of lawful gun ownership and strong gun laws to boot. But in Oakland, well, it's something different. The Mercury News quotes Glenn Upshaw Sr., a violence interrupter with the Oakland-based nonprofit Youth Alive, who says the East Bay, quote, is the wild, wild west right now. It's full of guns, and the smallest inkling of a disagreement can result in a shooting. Across the state, the Mercury News reports of shootings involving firearms, as opposed to BB guns, pellet guns, and the like, last year dropped 27% compared to 2021, easing from 477 to 347 incidents, according to local analysis. Yet, reports of shootings in Alameda County jumped to 79 in 2023, up from 66 and 72 in the previous years. The most dangerous highway, Interstate 580, particularly in Oakland and east of Dublin, California. The Mercury News also notes another factor that I think is helping to drive the rise in crime in the area, and that is the fact that not many of these cases are being solved. You can get away with a crime, you're going to commit more of them, right? Mercury News reports that despite state officials pouring millions of dollars into fighting the issue, extra overtime for officers to patrol the region's roadways, the planned implementation of an explosive network of cameras, quote, authorities made arrests in just 13 of the 211 confirmed shootings that police investigated across the Bay Area in 2022 and 2023. 13. That 6% arrest rate in those cases mirrored statewide trends, with California Highway Patrol investigators finding meager success involved in solving freeway shooting cases, specifically in those 2 years. Michelle Rippey, professor of criminal justice at California State University East Bay, says these shootings are notoriously hard to investigate. She specifically pointed to the fact that there are often fewer witnesses to freeway shootings by their very nature. Such incidents mean the suspects and victims leave the scene almost instantly. She says what's happening is we're seeing these community gun violence issues are also being dredged onto the highway. We almost need to turn to look at our community violence from a public health lens, she said, emphasizing that freeway shootings are a part of a larger issue of gun violence. No, by the way, she did not say we need more gun control laws. In fact, throughout the entirety of the San Jose Mercury News report, you don't find a single person calling for more gun control laws in California. Kevin Grant, trainer coordinator with Oakland's Department of Violence Prevention, says he wants to see the California Highway Patrol be more creative as it works to curtail the gunfire on its roadways. He says the agency should embrace cooperating with local violence interrupters to help understand the people involved in certain shootings and to possibly even prevent future violent outbursts. So far, though, he says he hasn't seen the agency utilize that approach to its fullest extent, making for a missed opportunity. Quote, we just need to throw more resources at it, he said. Well, what resources are we talking about here? You know, Oakland had a ceasefire program in place from, I believe, 2016, 2017, up through the pandemic. And homicides actually dropped by more than 50% in Oakland while that program was in place. And, you know, we've talked about ceasefire on this show many times before. This is the carrot and stick approach. When done properly, it is a carrot and stick approach. Now, there are some jurisdictions that offer more carrots than sticks, right? Well, we don't want to put you behind bars. We want to give you the job training. We want to make sure you've got the mentorship that you need, all the counseling. But if you go on to commit another crime, well, I mean, that's not that big a deal. There are some jurisdictions that take that approach. That's not the right approach. The right approach in ceasefire is, listen, we know you're shooting. You're going to stop shooting. We're going to help you turn your life around if you let us. We're going to make you stop shooting if you don't. So, yes, behind door number one, there are job opportunities. There's career counseling. There's mental help if you need it. There is job training. There's, you know, all kinds of resources for you to turn your life around. If you don't take advantage of what's behind door number one, behind door number two, there are federal prosecutors. And the next time you get arrested, we're going to kick your case up to federal court. You're not going to get a plea deal. You're not going to deal with a soft-on-crime judge. You're going away for as long as we possibly can put you behind bars because we're tired of the damage that you're doing to our community. When ceasefire is done correctly, typically what happens is violent crime drops, shooting drops, arrests drop because you're not trying to cast this wide net over everybody, right? You're going after the most prolific and violent offenders and those who are at risk of becoming prolific violent offenders. And when you take that targeted approach in dealing with the people who are actually committing violent crimes, as opposed to people who are trying to exercise their fundamental civil rights, good things can happen. Now, Oakland has gotten away from that strategy. They're trying to bring it back, kind of fell apart during the pandemic. But there's something else going on. Again, I don't think you can just point to the demise of ceasefire and say, all right, this is the reason why we're seeing the shooting spike in the East Bay area. Again, 6% clearance rate for shootings. not just shootings on the freeway. 6% clearance rate for all shootings in Alameda County over the past couple of years. Again, I'll go back to what I said just a couple of minutes ago. If criminals believe that they can get away with a crime, they're more likely to commit additional crimes. And right now, more than 90% of the time, if you shoot somebody in the East Bay, you're getting away with it. You're not getting arrested. You're not getting prosecuted. You're not being put in prison. So should we really be all that shocked that shootings are up while arrests are less than 10%? Again, you don't need more gun control laws in California. In fact, you need to get a lot of them off of the books, quite frankly. What you need, again, is to go after those prolific offenders. Now, the individual with the Oakland Department of Violence Prevention, Kevin Grant, said he'd like to see the California Highway Patrol work more closely with the violence interrupters. I don't have any problem with that in theory. But again, what message are those violence interrupters sending? Is it just a matter of carrots and no sticks? Are there any words of warning? More importantly, what are the violence interrupters doing, not only to stop the violence, but what are they doing? Again, individual acts of violence, right? Okay, you two are beefing. Let's sit down and talk about this. What are they doing to help spread the word, to help change the mentality there in East Bay, that these types of acts of violence are in fact appropriate? Now, as for the politicians in Sacramento, like Governor Gavin Newsom, again, he's, you know, trying to put more cops on the streets of Oakland, having the guy at California Highway Patrol come out and start patrolling the freeways. But he's making it as hard as possible for people to exercise the right to armed self-defense, right? I mean, again, if you want a concealed carry license in California right now, it is a very, very difficult thing to do. Cal DOJ is certifying instructors, so the old instructors can't just keep teaching the same course. They're changing what that training course must look like. And of course, you know, in some areas of the state, jurisdictions are charging four figures, $1,000 or more, for you to exercise your right to carry. Again, the state keeps cracking down on legal gun owners, but there is not a hint of evidence, nor do I suspect you would find any evidence, that concealed carry licensees are committing these crimes in Alameda County. So why are lawful gun owners the top priority, and cracking down on lawful gun owners the top priority for Democrats in Sacramento, instead of going after the people who are actually pulling the trigger on California freeways? All right, before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish, allowing ideas to flourish, debates to ignite, and progress to be made. Without it, our pursuit of liberty, our ability to challenge, our capacity to innovate would be severely constrained. Yet in today's digital age, the very platform that should democratize information is being used to narrow the spectrum of ideas that we're exposed to. Important discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being systematically silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. In an era where dialogues about retirement, investments, and economic freedoms are increasingly censored, Wealth Protection Research is focused on ensuring that diverse, controversial, and revolutionary ideas have a platform. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out the financial experts, the thought leaders, and the trailblazers who have been pushed to the margins by mainstream media and tech platforms like Facebook and Google. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, offering fresh, often contrarian perspectives on protecting and growing your wealth, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. By spotlighting these thinkers like Jim Rickards and Porter Stansberry, WPR is not just sharing financial advice. They are fostering a movement towards a more open, informed, and free society. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three basic ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains the ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76623. And if you text ideas today, you'll also get a free gold investment kit from Wealth Protection Research sponsor Augusta Precious Metals. Now, if you, like us, believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, act now. Text ideas to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 election protection report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text ideas to 76626 to receive your free copy today. The battle for free speech is the battle for our future. Wealth Protection Research is ensuring that the ideas capable of shaping our financial well-being are available to all who want to hear them. Don't wait. Grab your free report now. Text ideas to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of Fox News. Illegal immigrant caught in deadly hit and run had history of armed robbery, assault, and drugs. This in Maryland. In fact, Gilver Zelaya Diaz, arrested last week in connection with a hit and run that claimed the life of a 26-year-old in Montgomery County, Maryland. As it turns out, Zelaya Diaz has long been known to law enforcement here in the United States, even though he is not in this country legally. Prosecutors say that Zelaya Diaz, who has as many as 8 different aliases, entered the country illegally in 2019, but he has a history of charges for, quote, driving on a suspended license, driving without a license, speeding, armed robbery, second-degree assault, and possessing controlled and dangerous substances with an intent to distribute. Despite that laundry list of criminal behavior, Zelaya Diaz was released from federal prison in July of last year. He was, on probation at the time of the incident when the victim in this case, 26-year-old, who was a father and uncle, riding a skateboard when he was allegedly struck by Zelaya Diaz, who then fled the scene. He was able to elude officers for over a week, but according to Fox, was arrested after investigators used license plate databases and vehicle records to narrow down the search for his vehicle. Prosecutors have asked that he be held until trial, given his criminal history and the fact that he has failed to appear at 5 previous court dates. So he is currently in custody in the Montgomery County Correctional Facility. But again, why was this guy out in this to begin with? Why was this guy in this country to begin with? If he was released from federal prison in 2023 and he was in this country illegally, was he deported once he was released from prison? Did he sneak back into the country since last July? A lot of outstanding questions here in the case of Gilver Zelaya Diaz, and hopefully we'll get some answers here in the very near future. Today's armed citizen story from New Mexico. As the New York Post reports, a hero grandmother who shot a burglar who interrupted a Taylor Swift movie night with her granddaughter before tending to the injured man's wounds. Anissa Tenen and her 4-year-old grandchild were watching the Taylor Swift Eras Tour film. She's hanging out. She said it was an extra special night because they got a chance to have dinner together. They had bath time, and then they plopped down on the couch to watch the movie. She said, we had our popcorn and M&Ms. We're dancing and singing along. And she said our lives were about to suddenly change. Officers say a stranger, identified as 34-year-old Joseph Rivera, burst through the door. He was on the run from police, Albuquerque police, chasing Rivera when they caught him driving a stolen car that night. They deployed spike strips to stop him, but he drove on the rims of the vehicle until he crashed, and he jumped out, ran away on foot, hopped a fence into Tenen's yard, and then strolled right into her home. Tenen told KRQE, I jumped over the couch. We met there by the front door, and that's where he grabbed me. He was upset. He said to give him my keys. He said he didn't want to go to jail. He threatened to hurt my granddaughter and me. Well, that is when Tenen tried to calm Rivera down. Ultimately, though, she did give him the keys to her car so she could get him to leave. She said, I told him not to hurt us. I'd do whatever he wanted. I'd give him keys, money, whatever it took. As he started to take off towards the car, she calls 911. You can actually hear her in the recording telling her granddaughter, I need you to be really brave right now. I got to go. Stay right here in the bedroom. It's okay, baby. She grabbed her gun in case Rivera came back, which he did, by the way. He could hear the police sirens getting closer to the home, so he goes back into the house, allegedly going through the locked front door. He then charged at Tenen, She warned him, get back, I have a gun, get back, I will bleep and shoot you. And then she did. Rivera asked Tenen, why? Why did you shoot me? And she responded, because you're in my bleeping house. Didn't say bleeping, of course, but this is family friendly. Tenen then tried to help put pressure on Rivera's gunshot wound, bring him water. But she also said, I will shoot you again if you try anything. A couple minutes later, police arrived at the home, dragging Rivera out of the residence. Tenen told local media, I do believe we had a guardian angel here with us. And I do firmly believe that God was watching over us. Rivera has now been charged with burglary, attempted to commit a felony, as well as auto theft. He has five previous felony convictions for burglaries and auto thefts. He had actually been wanted on a prior charge at the time of the latest arrest. He failed to appear in court after a judge had released him on bail. Tenen, in their Facebook post, said the city's a mess. Criminals are ruining innocent people's lives every day. I'm sick of keeping quiet about the disaster that the city's leadership has created. Not just the city's leadership. I mean, I'd add in Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham as well. And, you know, keep in mind, Governor Grisham's response to the violent crime in Albuquerque was to tell people like Tenen that she can't carry a firearm when she's taking her granddaughter to the park, right? The governor tried to ban concealed carry in the entirety of Albuquerque and Bernalillo County. Federal judge said, no, you can't do that. Then she said, all right, well, what about parks and playgrounds? And the judge said, well, how about playgrounds for now? And so that is currently in effect in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County. Now, I don't know that anybody's been cited for carrying a concealed firearm in a playground, but technically, as of right now, I won't say it's against the law. It is against the governor's edict because she didn't pass this law. The state legislator hasn't passed a law. The governor has declared a public health emergency over gun violence in Albuquerque and has said that people like Ms. Tenen can't protect themselves or their grandbabies when they take them to parks or playgrounds. Well, parks, yes. Playgrounds, no. In Albuquerque right now. Confused? Yeah, I am too. Because again, we have a right to protect ourselves. These criminals aren't complying with the law. Mr. Rivera wasn't complying with all kinds of laws. So why does the governor believe that Anissa Tenen and other lawful gun owners should be deprived of their ability to protect themselves and their loved ones when they visit a playground or, again, in her mind, anywhere in the city of Albuquerque or Bernalillo County? Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Police officers in Arvada, Colorado, who were able to come to the aid of a woman who was in labor and help deliver triplets on a front porch. Boy, my twins just turned 19 last month. I can't even imagine. My first 6 months of having twins are a blur. I don't remember much about it. So sleep deprived. I can't imagine dealing with triplets. But Eric Mayada and his wife, well, they have welcomed their triple bundles of joy. This happened back on April 18th. Eric Mayada told KDVR in Colorado that police found his 24-year-old girlfriend in active labor. There were four officers who helped deliver two of the babies before she was rushed to the hospital to help deliver the third. He said, being gifted three, from going from none to three, I'm just over the moon about that. First time dad. And it's a three-for-one special. He said the opportunity or gift would not have landed in our laps if we couldn't have handled it. I sure hope that that is the case. Like I said, twins were a struggle for me. So I hope that he's got a good family support system around to help with the triplets. He said, it sounds like it. He said his girlfriend had been staying at her mom's house when she began experiencing contractions. So she decided to walk to her neighbor's home where one of her friends lives like a block away. She said, he said she made it two houses down from his house and then her water broke. And at that point, he said it was starting to rain. It was cold out. The neighbor didn't realize who she was at first. She was wrapped in a blanket yelling at 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, that's the last thing you're going to expect. One of your friends to show up at your door screaming bloody murder. When her friend realized, oh, okay, this is who it is. He called 911 shortly after four officers arrived. They called paramedics. But then they heard the first cry from a baby boy. and he was already turning blue in the cold there. So officers actually tied the umbilical cord with bread ties, cut the cord, rushed the infant into a patrol car. The baby stopped breathing at that point. So one of the officers actually had to start infant CPR and chest compressions. Mother at that point was telling officers, there are more. I'm expecting triplets. The second baby, again, born there on scene before paramedics were able to take mom and the two infants to the hospital. That's where the third baby was delivered. Three boys, 14 weeks early. Eric Mayetta says, Bert, Kikitaro, and Billy Bob all have strong heartbeats. I'm not saying a word, man. Not saying a word. You have the right to name your kid whatever you want. Preemie's still in the NICU, and Mayetta has not actually been able to hold his sons yet. He says they have to sit by and watch through a piece of plexiglass. He says, I can reach in. I can do hand hugs. He said, but to me, that's only so fulfilling. Well, I do hope that Eric Mayetta and his wife are soon able to pick up their sons, give them all the love that they've been holding on to, give them that really big squeeze. He also says he is thankful for the first responders who were there. He said, with as cold as it was and everything, he says it's the perfect ingredient for a perfect storm, for it not to end well had it not been for those guys. Babies have a long road ahead of them. They're expected to be in the NICU for the next 4 months, but I would not be surprised if one or more of those officers ends up making an appearance there at the hospital, check in on those triplets that were born on a front porch there in Greeley, Colorado. I said Arvada. This was actually in Greeley, Colorado here just a few days ago. And congratulations to Eric and his girlfriend on the three bundles of joy. Good luck and good wishes to you. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Hey, coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about what's going on in Massachusetts with the gun control bill that is being worked on behind closed doors and the pushback that Democrats are getting from black gun owners in the Boston area. This is a fascinating and very welcome development. Republicans are actually hoping to capitalize on this too, trying to convince those gun owners, hey, you know what? There is a party that stands up for your right to keep and bear arms. We're going to be talking all about it on the next edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else, because your support really does matter. Thank you again. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.